Uh-oh, here we go.
Am I allowed to do this to you now?
No, no, because now I've got a big head, you have to wipe me.
Yeah, I'll...
Yeah. Okay. Does it fit?
No.
Nah.
A bit tight.
Bit, right, yeah. So I've got a big head now.
It's a bit tight now.
Yeah.
Oh, God, how are you today? Okay. Very good. Carry on.
Okay, what about announcements?
Yeah.
Oh, there you are. Announcements over there. Okay. Now what?
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
I'm Sarah here.
Very good.
And yeah, please. All are welcome. We are run by the Buddhist Society of WA. Before we go to any announcement, we need to appreciate and big clapping for
your help.
You want to announce? What is that for? No, Australia for Buddhism and gender equality.
Because I have already got an MA, that's from university.
Yes.
And now it's an AM, so you put those together. So you can now call me ma'am. Ma'am, yeah, ma'am bro.
No, yeah.
And I remember just a long time ago, if an English earl, you know, one of those lords, the earl, if they get an OBE, what do they become? An earlobe. I really thought it was an honour for bad jokes.
You deserve one.
Yeah, yes, I think so.
Very, very nice, no, to learn that Ambarajan Ram become the doctor of Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yeah, well, you got your crown on.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Okay, let's go to the emergency exit. And okay. You all know by this time how to run to the emergency if there is an emergency. And there are restrooms while coming in, you would have seen as well, so I don't need to remind this time. And please switch off your phone. I will remind that one very strongly. Put it in silent so it won't disturb anybody else. Just, you know, vibrate on your packet. And there is an 8 p.m. announcement from the ceiling. As usual, don't run off. It's for the hospital visitors and others who are visiting us in the hospital. And yeah, our Bob is recording the talk, and it will be in the WS, the website as well. There is a question, Bob. If you want to write any anonymous questions or something which you want to ask Ajahn.
Or complaints.
Whichever.
Yeah.
That's it from me. Thank you very much.
The complaints go to her. Questions go to her. Excellent. So we do begin by doing some chanting. So if you'd like to clear your throats, first of all. And have you all the throats cleared?
Yeah.
Okay. So are you ready? Very good. So, a one, a two, a one, two, three, four.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, and burdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest things that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. happy. Let none deceive another, or despise anything in any state. Let none, through anger or ill will, wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, upwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to its views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
It's getting a bit flat, so I thought I'd be a bit off at the end. Very good.
Excellent. This one.
Yes, you may have that one. Excellent. So, some meditation. And learning just how to keep the mind really peaceful and calm. But still, so, first of all, it's like happiness. It's an important part to actually, just before you meditate, in other words, just to have a bit of fun and games and joy, even before we get into meditation. And that's one of the reasons why that, you know, I still got a little bit of a cough from all my travelling around, but I found out, you know, what it was called. I think I caught it in Indonesia. It's pony virus. You haven't heard of pony virus before? It makes you a little horse. But it's much better than the diseases which you might contract when in the airport. You know what happens when you get a disease or a virus in the airport? What it's called? Terminal illness. Ah, come on! I don't change. Just they get worse and worse, that's all.
So there's terminal 1 and 2 and 3 and 4.
Yeah, yeah, very good. So anyway, so little by little, we learn how to have fun with our life, even being a monk, enjoying stuff. And that's one of the reasons why that when you learn how to meditate, you're light-hearted. When you're light-hearted, it's easy to meditate. So little by little, you're more and more peaceful, more and more calm, and more joyful. You don't carry the world on your back. So sometimes, just like going to the airports. I love going to the airports, because one of the times I went to the airport, they asked me, said, sir, what have you got in your bag? There's only this little bag over here, that's all I take. They said, have you got any gels? And I said, what type of gel? I said, hair gel. And I laughed, and the guy laughed. So that's the last thing I'd have, hair gel. Anyway, keeping a sense of humour, learning how to not take things too seriously in life, even tough things which happen in life, is a way to actually to lessen the heaviness of life. So that's the same thing which we do in meditation, to get some freedom. Now when we do meditate, meditation is a pretty easy thing to do once you don't make it another task to perform where you have to work hard and strive and judge yourself. It's just learning how to let go. So first of all, you let go of the past, then you let go of the future. And I don't know the last time which you heard this little metaphor. It's the metaphor of the two shopping bags. So, you go to the shops, and you've got these two heavy shopping bags, and you've been carrying them for a long time, and they're really heavy, they're packed so full. And the shopping bag in your left hand, it's got a name on the outside. Not Harvey Norman or Coles. That name on the outside is PAST, the past. And the shopping bag in the right hand has got another name on the outside, FUTURE, the future. And they're packed solid with all sorts of, please excuse me, useless stuff. And you've been carrying them around for such a long time that your arms ache and your shoulders hurt and you're really tired. So what should you do? Put them down. First of all, you put the shopping bag of your left hand down to the ground. You know what happens? As soon as that shopping bag meets the ground, the weight disappears. There's no burden anymore. And that allows you to actually, you know, grasp the handle and lift your arm up so your left arm can relax and rejuvenate just in its normal position. For the right hand, that's got your past, your future, sorry. All the things you're afraid of, concerned about, all the worries, it's mostly negative stuff in that right hand bag, but nevertheless, you have a few dreams and hopes in there, and you can feel its weight, really heavy, and, it's okay, never mind, tissue man, just in case. See, that's worrying about the future.
Insurance policy, okay.
The insurance policy, people make so much money out of making you scared and worried about what might happen next. And so, as for me, insurance, I've got no insurance, got no superannuation, don't worry about the future, because your future is being made right now. If you care about this present moment, then your future will be sweet. The best you can do about the future. Anyway, back to the shopping bag. The shopping bag in the right hand is full of so many worries and concerns. So what do? You lower that to the ground. And when it meets the floor, there's no more weight, no more burden. So you can move your hand away from the right hand shopping bag. And you're free, carrying no past, no future. You're just in this wonderful present moment, just being now. And it's not as if that someone's going to take away your past or going to steal your future. That's going to be there for you afterwards. But while you're meditating, you put it down so you can relax to the max and don't have to worry about what happened in the past, what's going to happen in the future. Now you can have some free time. You can have a holiday. You can have a vacation. And this place becomes Club Med, yeah. A place where you can relax. Because that's one of the problems with people. They don't know how to relax these days. Even they go overseas. And it's a big burden for them. They're worried about all sorts of things. Catching the plane, not catching the plane. I remember once when I was going to Indonesia to give some talks. And when I got to Perth Airport, the flight had been cancelled. Not delayed, but actually cancelled. And I was supposed to be giving some talks over there. And so, what happened? I couldn't do anything. But actually, I found out why it was cancelled. You know why it was cancelled? That was the time of the bird flu crisis. And Garuda was a bird. So the plane got bird flu. So when I think that, you don't get angry. You can't do anything about it anyway. I just went back to temple and got the flight the next day. So, if you are don't worry about things, you live a much more healthy peaceful life. But sometimes I don't worry about things enough, I reckon. Because I don't worry, because I don't have anxiety. That's because people tell me if you worry a lot and have anxiety, you lose a lot of weight, you go very thin. And that's when you worry, why I get fat. It's not that I eat too much, it's just that I don't worry enough. So if I went to see a therapist, you know, to actually to lose some weight, they told me, oh, you better worry some more. It's against my nature to worry and be anxious. Even that story I said about travelling a lot, if you actually get involved in like an aircraft explosion. Because that's what was happening. People were telling me, the more you travel, the more likely you're going to get blown up. Or something's going to go wrong at 36,000 feet. And that's when I worked out the three advantages, the benefits. See the positive side of life. If you get blown up at 36,000 feet, you don't have to worry about cremation, it's all done on the spot. And so, your ashes are sprinkled.
Yeah.
All over the place. Don't have to worry about barrels or something. They're sprinkled all over the place. Number two is if you get blown up at 36,000 feet, you know how much funerals cost these days? $5,000-$10,000. And what for? There, it's not only you don't have to pay, it's all done for free. But you actually get, the family gets insurance out of it. You actually get some money out of your grandma's death. Financial advantage. It's difficult financial times these days, so you can't sniff at that. And lastly, the best benefit, if you die at 36,000 feet, you are so close to heaven, it's easy to go the rest of the way. Not a belief in heaven. Anyway, to say things like that, just a positive attitude towards life, is just, actually when I was on the aircraft, that, they have these security dogs actually on board these days.
Oh.
Yeah, so seeing the security dog, I say, what's the dog doing? Sort of sitting on the aircraft. He said, it's security. I said, look, I'll tell you how it works. So he sent the dog down to the back of the economy class. He saw there's a backpacker there, sniffed him, and the dog barked once and wagged his tail once. And the hand said, oh, that's a sign that guy is smuggling marijuana. When we get to the other, the end, we'll arrest him. Let's see what else is on the plane. So he sent the dog up to business class, and there's a well-dressed woman there, sniffed that woman, and this time just came back, barked twice, and wagged his tail twice. Oh, that's actually cocaine. There's a cocaine user on the flight. Let's see what else. So I sent him up to first class. And at first class, there was this well-dressed business fellow sipping champagne. The dog sniffed him. Came back, barked three times, wagged his tail three times. Wow, you wouldn't believe it, that's heroin. We've got a heroin trafficker on this flight. And then we went back again to business class. He sniffed this other oriental gentleman and came back. And he jumped up on his seat, the dog jumped up on his seat, tail between legs, started whining and pooed on his seat. And the handler said, wow, that's a sign there's a bomb on board. You didn't see that one coming. Okay, anyway, the dog will bark as well.
For good measure.
For good measure, yeah. Anyway, I'm back to serious stuff about meditating. Now, let go of the past, let go of the future, be in this present moment. And then life is much more easy. So what we do with meditation, we're sitting here, get ourselves really nice and comfortable. That's why we have nice chairs. Or those of you who get here early, you have the sofa, and sometimes you can actually get a small chair. There's not that many people today, so get another chair in front of you and put your legs out so it's nice and comfy for you. But whatever you do, it's comfortable for you, and that means your body is not a problem. No aches and no pains. No interruptions. So you can sit down nice and peaceful. And the first part of meditation, we learn how to relax our body. So you may have some tightness, some tension somewhere in your body. So what we actually learn how to do in meditation, first of all, to relax the body, we are mindful of the body, and then we are kind to it. this wonderful thing we call, not mindfulness, but kindfulness. So add that kindness onto your body. And for many things in this world, if you have an ache or a pain somewhere, just even rubbing it or stroking it. Because I still remember very clearly, just growing up in the poor parts of West London, there when we played soccer in the streets around the back of this block of flats, and you know, whenever you went for a tackle, you know, you'd fall on the ground, usually asphalt or stone, and you'd just scrape the skin off your knees. So you always remember just having scabs on your knees. And anyway, as soon as you did that, because it's just round the back, you'd run to your mother, and then my mother would just stoop down and kiss the wound. And you know, she always called it kissing it better. I remember that from my young days. And I also remember, as soon as she did that, just the pain went away. The sting was gone. Immediately. And it was really weird. But what it told me, that the act of kindness and love can take away pain. And I know that also in old days in hospitals, if any of you are nurses here or carers, and sometimes they'll be so busy having to fill out forms. In old days, the nurses would actually sit by you, hold your hand, and just talk with you, just give you kindness. That was an important part of nursing therapy. That just a little bit of kindness. I know how it works. It takes away the tightness and the fear of, you know, when you're injured and you feel safe. And it means that, you know, you relax and the body starts to heal itself. So because of that, just a bit of kindness is one of the best therapies you could ever have. And if you've got no one else to be kind to you, you have yourself to be kind to you. Be kind to yourself. Sometimes people with anxiety, I teach them to, well, you feel it usually in your chest, is a counterpart, physical fear to the emotion of anxiety. Anxiety is in your head somewhere, in your mind. It may be real, it may be imaginary, it may be important or whatever, but you can feel it in your body. When you feel it in your body, you massage it as kindly as you possibly can. And then the anxiety goes away. Because the physical connection is dealt with, then the cause, the anxiety, disappears as well. I still remember one of the doctors working in Royal Perth Hospital had a patient in the, I forget what ward it was, but she was on oxygen mask because she had anxiety disorder, panic attacks. She couldn't even breathe properly, so had the oxygen mask on. And so there she was, giving this medication, that medication, and another type of medication. In the end, she just ran out of medications. Nothing was working. And she told me that she thought, well, if medication doesn't work, maybe meditation. Simple thing. Ajahn Brahm's method. So she told her, next time you have a panic attack, feel it in your body, using your chest, get your hand and just massage it. As kindly, as softly as you possibly can. As much love and care to your own body. And as you're doing that, see what happens. And so, the next morning, the doctor went to the ward. The woman had the mask off. They said, I feel fine now, I'm going home. It worked. And I really scolded that doctor. And she told me about it. I said, you silly doctor. You should have tried that first of all instead of all these medications. Saved a lot of time. Saved a few beds. But these are very powerful ways of healing the body. So it takes the pain away from your body. So, what to do is when you start meditating, feel your body. Get to know your body. It's amazing how many people don't know their body. Even just first year when I was over in Thailand 45 years ago, didn't have any shoes, we were just walking through the forest. We'd always hit our toes on a stump of wood or cut it or whatever. When Ajahn, Thai monks never had that. And Ajahn Chah, he looked at us Western monks, he said, you know, you're very well educated, but you've got stupid feet. I thought, really what good way of calling it, stupid feet. It was true. You know, we're all up here thinking about all sorts of important things. and our mindfulness, our awareness was never on our feet. Had no idea what our feet were doing. That's why we kept on injuring it. So, have you got stupid knees? Stupid tummies? Sometimes we have. Stupid digestion? Often we have. We don't know how to relax and let go and allow things just to flow through us instead of trying to force it out. So, little by little, we learn how to be very aware of our body, kind to it, get to know the body. It's amazing just what we can do. And then, when our body feels really relaxed and peaceful and at ease, no headaches, no pain, no irritations, then we do the same with our emotional world. All your worries and concerns. So we're kind to our mind. So when you're kind to your mind, you can let go of all the past. You can't change it now. Let it go and just let it be. As for the future, always remember now's the only time you have. Now's the time you can actually do something for your future. So you stay in this wonderful moment just now. It's not that hard. And for all the people who keep thinking too much, don't worry, it's easy to stop thinking. It's easy to have some peace and silence in your mind when you listen. To the gaps between my words. What are you experiencing when I'm not speaking? Now you know what silence feels like. It's listening to the world rather than giving your commentary on it. It's like being and not describing. I used to be good at that when I was first couple of years at school, until a teacher would ask me, "What do you think about that?" I'd say nothing, and you got in trouble. People thought you were stupid. Rather, you were really wise. So it took me a long time to learn how. Just to listen, to feel, without giving it any name. That's one of the reasons, time to start meditating. That's one of the reasons why one of the greatest similes was of the famous Taoist sage Lao Tzu, who one day took one of his young disciples on a walk through the forest. And they came up to the ridge of the mountains at sunset. And it was one of these gorgeous sunsets with the crimsons and the golds and the yellows streaking against the sky, the really deep blue sky. And it was such a magnificent sunset that the disciple, who was supposed to keep quiet, is supposed to keep noble silence. It was one of the rules of walking with the master. Don't talk. But this disciple couldn't help himself. Wow! What a wonderful sunset! At which point, the master turned around, went back to his temple, and as soon as he got back, told everybody that that young disciple can never go on a walk with me in the evening, ever again. He broke the rule, he talked. Well, what's wrong with talking? And that's when Lao Tzu said, "When my disciple said, 'What a beautiful sunset,' he was not watching the sunset anymore. He was watching the words. The words are so different than the feeling and the experience." That's one of the reasons why the commentary, the description, is one step removed from reality. And when we don't say anything inside, we're actually far closer to truth, to meaning, and also the peace. This is so delightful. The inner silence, which is there for you all the time. To show what I mean, when you come in this room, what do you notice? The people, the chairs, the little shrine up here, the fat monk. But do you realize there's more space in this room than there are people? Have a look. Well, we don't even notice things. We've forgotten to notice what's between us, what joins us, what embraces us, what connects us. The space, the silence. So sometimes if you can change a little way of perceiving and see the space between thoughts, it's so much more delightful and helpful and nourishing than all these crazy thoughts which get you nowhere. After a while, one becomes a close friend to inner silence. And that will take you into wonderful meditations. Just being without giving anything and a name. Easy. Don't you agree? Some do. Anyway, let's give it a try now. So now we'll do half an hour's meditation. So before we start, because you've been sitting down longer than I have, ooh, run out of, anyone got a shilling for the electric meter? Ooh, not big enough. Hospitals try to save funds. You know that person who's only going in for keyhole surgery for his intestines in Armidale Hospital, and when he came out of that had to give him anaesthetic, when he came out of the anaesthesia, there was a big bump on his head, and he said, I've got a really splitting headache, can I have some painkillers for my headache? And the nurse said, what do you mean, you know, we didn't even touch your head, it was just intestinal operation, no keyhole surgery. He said, but look, my head really hurts. And the nurse felt the head, and there was a swelling there, it was red. So she quickly rang the surgeon and said, what's going on? Just, you know, I know it's only supposed to be an intestinal operation, but this guy's got a swelling, complains about a big pain on the top of his head, and you can see it there, it's really swollen and red. And the surgeon said, oh yeah, because we have to cut costs these days, we only gave him a small amount of anaesthetic. When he started to wake up, we used the hammer. Modern science kind of cut. That's only a joke. Anyway, okay, so before we do meditation, do you want to stand up and stretch? Okay, now when you're stretched enough, you can go and sit down again. I'll take some water and I'll take this. Is that not correct?
Thank you, Roger.
Anything I'll do for you. What's this one? Only a bit of water. You're very frugal. You know we don't have any water restrictions anymore. It's been raining last week. Here we go. So first of all, as you sit down, close the eyes. The reason why we close the eyes in this meditation is so we can become more sensitive to our body, first of all. How does your body feel? First of all, just generally, your whole body. And then we become more careful, more meticulous, looking at our body piece by piece. So how are your legs feeling now? Are they in a good position? Do you need to adjust them? If you're sitting on a chair, do you need to push your feet out or tuck them in? If ever you come here and you find the chairs are too tall for you, then put something under your feet. If you've got really long legs, then put something under your buttocks. So you can, don't just suffer, just sit there and see if you can find comfort for your legs. And next, just fidget your bottom, because often people's legs can go to sleep or they get fidgety, usually in their bottom, because that's one of the areas we just don't really concern ourselves about. So, how does your bottom feel? Can you make it more comfortable? I just fidgeted a tiny bit, so the cushion is perfectly even under my buttocks. Once they feel comfortable, what I'm doing is mindfulness of parts of my body with kindness. Now move my mindfulness up my back. Sometimes I like leaning back against the backrest of a chair or against a wall. But sometimes I just stretch my back. Because I've seen many animals, even in animals like even kangaroos, doing a stretch. Most people, just when you stretch the body, it feels so pleasant. And it also helps just, you know, relax the body, especially the spine afterwards. For most people, if you've got injuries to the spine, obviously be careful. And I relax my shoulders. So what I mean by relaxing my shoulders, I'm just aware of that one part of the body, zooming in on that part of the body, feeling it, moving it, until I feel that there's real relaxation and comfort there. I find that sweet spot where the shoulders are as comfortable as I can possibly make them. And then I experience the feelings in my hands, making sure that they are comfortable. It doesn't matter where I position them, just as long as they feel comfortable. Because when they're comfortable, it's like parking a car outside, knowing it's all locked up, it's safe, and it will be there for you afterwards. Just like, you know, looking after your body, so in a few minutes you'll be able to let it go and attend to your emotional world, where meditation really starts to take off. Then I go up to my itchy throat. I look at it, I don't try and control it. I'm just kind to it. Give it all the kindness I can to the irritation of my body. My goodness, I can feel it just ease. The mind does have the power to affect the body. And kindness, lack of fear, open the door of your heart to this moment, does have an effect which I can see, experience. And And then I'm going to go up to my head, especially my face. Just like anxiety can be felt on your chest area. There's so many other emotions are experienced around the eyes and the mouth, which is why people can look at your face and tell whether you are angry or relaxed, whether you're kind or afraid. So realizing that, be aware of any tightness around the eyes or the mouth. And experiment, trial and error, so you can relax those muscles. And I can feel those muscles relaxing. And the face becoming loose. And at peace. And with that, some of the emotions, mostly negative emotions, they disappear too. And you're at ease in this moment. And then I imagine about 2 inches behind my eyes, between my ears, is this thing called the brain. And many times our brain is overworked. It's tired with all the thinking and the worry and the work. So now just imagine, visualize putting your brain in a nice little bed, a nice blanket or duvet on, tucking it in and say, have a rest. You don't need to think and work out problems. Just imagining that helps you be kind to your overworked brain. If you've got any problems with the brain, that helps. It's relaxing it. Being kind. If you feel any tension, it's like a string which has been pulled on both ends. It's taut, it's stressed. Imagine letting go of both ends of that string. The two ends are usually what's happened in the past and the fears of what might happen in the future. Let go of those two. And the string becomes loose, at ease. It's where healing happens. And then be aware of your whole body, just sitting here. Relax to the max, hopefully. My body starts to feel so relaxed. It's delightful. This is part of meditation which is very helpful and important. Just like a person wakes up in the morning after a really good night's sleep, they feel so at ease, that delight of relaxation. Or when they go and have a massage or something, their whole body is just so at ease. Called the delight of relaxation. However much you can experience, please focus on that, because that will take the relaxation deeper.
quite sure already. You can look at your mind. What do I mean by that? How relaxed are you inside? How peaceful? Or how agitated, restless? It's what I call the peace-o-meter. Like a speedometer, like a thermometer. And given a number from 1 to 10, 1 is really peaceful, 10 is quite agitated. If they were to ask you, what would you say your number is right now? Peaceful or agitated? 1 is very peaceful, 10 is agitated. And be honest, it doesn't really matter. Don't use it as a stigma or a point of pride. What's really important is what makes you more agitated? And what makes you more peaceful? We're looking at the cause of peacefulness, relaxation inside the mind, and the cause of agitation. To this point, remember that simile of the two shopping bags. Everything about your past, please put it on the floor. Don't carry it around. You've been carrying it around too long. Everything about your future, the best you can do for your future is to put that shopping bag down, to regain your strength, your energy, by being in this moment, and caring, being kind to this moment we call now. How does it feel, just being? No future, no past. No guilt, no worries. You're just here. And listen to me as I talk to see if you can recognize the silence, between my words. Don't try and describe it. It could be a beautiful sunset. But you don't have to put into words. The wisdom born of silence. before the mind wanders away too much, you may, if you wish, to invite the awareness of the breath. Are you breathing in or are you breathing out? And how do you know? Just go to the natural feeling of the in-breath, the natural feeling of the out-breath. And as you breathe in, imagine breathing in peace, health, energy. And don't just say the words. Visualize, imagine what health is for you, what energy is. You breathe it in with every in-breath. As you breathe out, if you wish, breathe out, let go. Let go of any pain, any fear, any problems with every out-breath. Breathing in energy, health. Breathing out, cleansing. Those of you who want to experience the whole breath from the beginning of an in-breath right to its end, all the different feelings, sensations which make up as one in-breath, and there's a pause when the in-breath finishes, and the out-breath is yet to begin. As the out-breath goes out naturally, there's another pause. Out-breath finish, in-breath yet to start. meditation is getting close to finishing too. But before you open your eyes, how do you feel? How relaxed is your body? And how calm is your mind? What's the reading on the piezometer? Or why? What worked? This is where we learn. We learn from every meditation. We find it gets better and better and better. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. So please listen to every sound of the gong. And at the end of the 3rd ringing of the gong is the signal to slowly open your eyes. Sometimes we get so peaceful in meditation, we need to come out gently, slowly. How was that? Yeah, I felt relaxed too. But anyway, that for those of you who want to meditate at home or wherever you happen to be, you can always download these things for free. When you get your favourite one, you put it on your machine, iPhone or something, and there's no copyright, no fees. So, and then we put them up there, we can listen to it anywhere. Even on a toilet, in the bed, I don't care, as long as it works. So we don't have all rules and regulations. I still remember just calling the president of a Buddhist society years ago, whose name Chris Banks was the president. And she took the phone and said, "Oh, I'll have to call you later." I said, "Well, why not now?" She said, "Well, I've just come out of the shower, I'm naked." I said, "Look, I can't see you. It's only a telephone call." But sometimes she was way too sort of respectful. It didn't affect the tone of your voice, but she insisted on that. But wherever you are, as long as it's working and it's helpful for you, then please use it. It makes you nice and calm and peaceful and joyful. So also, did you experience the joy of it as well? It's not just peace and relaxation. When you get really relaxed, it's just joyful. It's a certain type of pleasure, comfort, safety, which you can really indulge in. It just feels so good, so happy. And that by itself is very therapeutic for every part of you. So anyway, are there any questions in the basket today? There is one. My good one. Yeah. The reason we do questions in the basket is because sometimes people get a bit embarrassed. But you don't have to be embarrassed about asking a question, just, you know, in the moment. Because you find if you have a question, it's usually everybody else's question as well. They're all interested. I think I said somewhere recently, it's been many, many years
since I've heard a question that I haven't heard before about meditation. The question is, what is a good life? A good life, feeling good about yourself. Not about how you serve others. What about yourself? How do you feel about who you are and what you're doing? Because you can't be perfect. It's an old story. I try not to repeat stories, but I just can't help it. Because some of these stories are just so good and so meaningful. There was another story of the forest, and looking for the best tree in the forest, the most perfect tree. Because I recall the first time I said this was at Mental Health Week, where the Perth Convention Centre, they were just holding sessions, and they invited me to teach one session. But this was interesting. This wasn't for the professionals. This was for the clients. The people who've been through all sorts of depressions, psychosis, schizophrenia, goodness knows, they've had it all. And they wanted to let someone to talk about it from a different point of view. And so, how I addressed it, one of the things I said, that please, when you have a free day and it's a beautiful afternoon, not like wet like today, go and have a walk in the forest. Just going into nature teaches you a lot about yourself and about reality. And see if you can find the most beautiful tree. Choose the one which you like the most. And you'll find it will never be a tree which is dead straight. It'll never be a tree with all the branches in the correct place. It'll never be a tree with all the leaves nice and green, with no sort of leaves brown or yellow, no leaves which have been eaten by the bugs. It won't be a tree with the bark perfectly smooth. You'll find your favourite tree, the most beautiful tree in the forest, will be bent, twisted, with many brown leaves, with many branches which have been torn out by the storms. And you'll find in those hollows, where it's made when a branch is torn from a tree, that's where the birds and the animals like possums, that's where they make their nests. And you see the bark of the tree, the trunk is all knobbly and scarred. And that is your favourite tree. The damaged ones. And so, if ever you think or someone tells you, you are damaged goods. Number one, you're normal. Every tree is damaged. And number two, and most importantly, you belong. You belong in the forest of human beings. Welcome. And also, often, you are some of the most beautiful trees in the forest. The ones I like to hang out with. And I say that not just trying to please people. But often, like when I was at university, it was a big university. And really smart people there, sometimes Nobel laureates. But every Thursday afternoon, I'll tell the story behind this, that I had a friend who was a Christian, and he decided that he was going to do some voluntary work, to lead a good life. And so I thought, he's going off to every afternoon, once afternoon a week, to go to the hospital outside of Cambridge for those people who had sort of emotional difficulties. And in particular, he volunteered at the Down syndrome unit. And the only reason I went there, to begin with, really honest, was to keep up with my Christian friends. I wouldn't let them beat me on anything. So to fly the flag. But that was a stupid, arrogant thing to do. But as soon as I went, I continued on it for 2 years, every Thursday afternoon. And I did that because I loved it. And The reason I loved it, it was surprising, it wasn't social service. These were my mates, my friends. And I preferred these than some of the people I met sort of, you know, in a fancy college. It's the first time I learned about what we call emotional intelligence, before that word was even coined. Because these were people who were so sort of unfortunately wrongly institutionalized. But they had so much sensitivity. And the example I give is this one day, you know, I was a young man, just broken up with my girlfriend, and I'm trying to sort of keep stiff up a bit, you know what I mean, just, you know, just bear with it. But one of these Down syndrome friends, they came running towards me, and they gave me this huge hug, and said, "What's wrong?" And that blew me away. How on earth do you know? How could you tell this? They said, "Oh, I can see something's wrong with you." And it was just, you know, just a normal sort of, you know, a 20, 21-year-old problem, breaking up with your girlfriend and feeling the end of the world. You know, but they saw it, and that really shook me. It was someone no one else could see. They had this great emotional intelligence. So, to this day, you know, everybody belongs in the forest. And don't you ever judge a person just because they may not be, actually, I can't really say that, normal. I don't know what normal is. Sometimes people think I'm pretty weird. So what is normal? So everybody has wonderful sort of features, and sometimes the most bent and twisted trees are the ones I like to hang out with the most. So what that actually taught me, that what is goodness? What is actually wrong? Being at peace with your own skin. Being happy with who you are. And just how to deal with life. Sometimes you get so negative if something goes wrong in our life. I was saying on the weekend at Nolamara Temple that the reason I say to have joy, put joy in your life. One of the stupid things I did when I was at college, and I came from a really poor family. My father died when I was 16. But nevertheless, he went to this big university, and they were offering, really well endowed, and they were offering all this free sherry. And those days, I was like, well, anything for free, why not? So they had this, the reception for the boat club. I only went there for the sherry. But you know what happened? I was never sort of a sporty type fellow. And so, before I knew it, I must have had too much sherry. I'd signed up for the boat club. Oh, that was really hard work. And one day, you know, actually, I'll be honest with you, there was one society I joined. And actually, we did play against Oxford, Cambridge, Oxford, once a year. Have a guess what that club and society was.
No.
That was too energetic for me. Sorry? No, that was terrible, but it's close.
The Beat.
No, it was Tiddlywinks. They always would hold it above a pub. I was pretty good at that. But anyway, just because that's my sense of humour. Wouldn't take anything seriously. And anyway, just when you get to row. But what happened when I was rowing one day, don't know how I ended up there, but, you know, on a race. And it's really hard work. You're going to pull that on and put it on. It's really hard. And the coach was on the towpath. And he shouted out at me. He said, "You, I'm making an ugly face. Smile." And that was the first time. Because at least at that time, you know, you were willing to give anything a chance. Just to try something different. And I smiled, and I remember sometimes you can see like red in front of your face, it was just so much pain just putting that off. And then, as soon as I smiled, everything got easy. And I had more energy, and the awe was far easier to pull. And it was strange. But, you know, I did that another time to reinforce that when I was in Thailand, the mode of transport, this was 45 years ago now, the mode of transport was in a ute, and the back of the ute had this metal frame covering it with a canopy, like a tarpaulin over it, in case it rained. And we were sitting in the back. And sounds okay, but these were potholed roads, dirt roads everywhere. They didn't have any sort of tarmac roads in that part of the world in those days. And of course, you couldn't really maintain them. It was always raining all over the place. So you had lots and lots of potholes. So, well, what happened when the ute hit a pothole? The truck went down and I went up. And I cracked my head on those bars so many times. And of course, what do? When you shout, slow down, avoid the potholes. And eventually I was hurting so much, and I started swearing. But then, you notice, the first year, a few months as a monk, then I noticed all those Thai monks, when they hit their head, they never swore. They laughed. And I just could not figure that out. It must have hurt them as well. Why did they laugh when they had this big pain? And the only way I could find out, first of all I did some thinking, and I thought, I know why. Maybe they've hit their head so many times they're brain damaged. That's what I thought. But then I know this is some very smart people. So then I realised it can't be brain damage. So then what I did, I decided experiment. Let's have a scientific investigation into this. And so I determined, no matter how hard I cracked my head, I would laugh the next time. And it was true. As soon as I laughed, it hurt much less. It lessens the pain. Do you believe me? If you don't, ask the person sitting next to you to hit you over the head. Every time I laugh at my own jokes, that's when I start coughing. But anyway, if you do that, you have to hit you over the head twice. First once, swear, the second time laugh, and see what the difference is. But it's true, you bring some joy and happiness and what, you get more energy. People are just so miserable in places like Australia. Always complaining. And so, instead of complaining, laugh. And if somebody just insults you, go up to them and laugh. That really upsets them. If your boss comes up to you and scolds you, just look at him. He says, what's going on here? What do you know? I don't know. Anyway, just that. Always know that you always belong in this world, and that's a good life. When you feel happy in your own skin, and when you're not so worried what other people think of you, that's a good life. And from there, your happiness can be infectious. You know, years ago I was teaching a retreat at the, used to be an old retreat centre convent over in Penguin Road in Rockingham. And anyway, moved into apartments these days. But anyway, that they had one day I was just sitting there waiting for the next interviewee to come in. And because it was like a church next door, saw these two men coming out of the church, two friends, and they sort of shook hands together and said, one said to the other, said, be good. And the other one said, no, that's no fun. And I thought about that and how wrong that is. Now, being good doesn't mean sort of being a wowser or you're not enjoying life. But being good is like caring about yourself and caring about others. But also remember to care about yourself. And then you can be such a good person, a kind person, and a very friendly person. And you have a good time. You know, I've been a monk now 45 years. And you know, you can leave being a monk any time. I could leave this evening. So simple to disrobe. So the only reason you stay as a monk because you're having a good time. Weird, isn't it? but I'm having a good time. You always see me coming here happy and smiling, even if you've got a cough, you know, still can actually make jokes. Why is that? It's because what a good time is, it comes, you know, from learning about how your mind works. You can laugh when you're having pain, crack jokes, even when, remember this Tibetan nun who was dying in the old hospice of Enchantum Park years ago. And he was an Australian Tibetan nun, and he always was counselling her towards the end of her life. And she rang me one day, and I was over in the monastery, Serpentine. She rang from Enchantum Park. I said, "Brum, please come quickly, I'm going to die soon." And she said, "Well, I mean, how soon?" She said, "Well, within 24 hours. And you know, the doctors didn't know that. But I said, "Oh no, it could be any time, but you know, probably another week." It's really amazing just how people know. And you know, I trusted that because, you know, she's very aware of her body, and you know, she sort of, I don't know, had a vision or something that she was going to go through. So I stopped whatever I was doing and found a car and went up to Enchantum Park. It's an hour and a quarter in those days. You know, the freeway wasn't there. Or was it there? Some of it was there, but not all the way down to where is it now? Imagine my poor Bumby or whatever. But I stopped whatever I was doing, got there. But you know, at the desk there was a nurse. I had to check in. This was a hospice. So I checked in with the nurse. I come to visit this lady, and she looked at me and she said, "No, you cannot just barge in to this woman's room." She said, "No visitors." I said, "She called me an hour ago. Said, we have to respect our patient's wishes. I've come all this way." And she got really angry at me. And she grabbed me and said, "Come with me." And so we went together, just the two of us, to the patient's door. And there was an A4 paper, which the nun had written herself. "Absolutely no visitors," said the sign. And this nurse pointed to it and glared at me. "See," she said. And I looked at that sign, and I saw on the bottom, you know, like the small print, which is all written by the nun herself, the four words, "Except for Ajahn Brahm." This is true. And it was not the most compassionate thing to do, I must admit. But I looked at that nurse with great sort of glee to get my own back. "See?" As he'd written it, the monkey shouldn't do that, maybe, but no compassion, but I couldn't resist it. So anyway, so she went away in a huff, and I went in the door. And then I asked the nun, "Why did you write that?" And she said, "Look, I'm dying, but everyone just looks at my sickness. And they talked to my sin, oh, poor thing, I don't want to see you go." And what was happening was that, you know, they were loading their emotional problems onto her. She said, "Look, I'm dying, I've got enough problems for myself without trying to sort of pacify all my friends and relations who don't want me to die." So they said, she said, "I was the only one who came into the room and talked to her, not her sickness, and told her jokes. Lots of joke." And I always remember that, because, you know, it taught me how to be a good person. Well, you think may be good, but it's not really just, you know, what's required. It doesn't mean just, you know, being just so virtuous and so moral that, you know, you're just, what do they call those sort of people, just
square.
Well, I'm certainly not square. I am round. That's certainly true. So, you know, some people have just got no fun in their life. And what they're trying to prove is not good. But anyway, when you're happy with yourself, and you're happy with what other people think of you, you may not be perfect, but you're a tree in the forest, unique, and no other tree likes you. That's being good. When you appreciate that for yourself, you don't try and prove yourself to other people. You just relax, be you, and then
You have a wonderful time.
To me, that's what being good is. And it really helps other people. That makes sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Any comments, questions?
Can I ask you? See, the kindness to others is easy.
Yeah.
But kindness to my own self is...
Oh, yeah. That's really weird, isn't it? Why can't we treat ourselves like others? And how many of you remember that story of the 7 months in a cave? Some of you do. Okay, some of you don't. Oh, very quickly, 7 months meditating in the cave, some robbers came along and they found that cave. They wanted to kill all the monks, take over the cave in the jungle, because it made an excellent hideout. So, and they talked to the head monk. The 7 months said, the head monk, his brother, his best friend, his enemy, an old monk who was going to die any time, a sick monk who could even die before the old monk, and a useless monk. The useless monk couldn't do anything for anybody else. Every time he meditated, he fell asleep and snored and disturbed everyone else. He just couldn't charge for his life. He was just a useless monk, but because we're kind, we allow even useless monks to come into our monasteries. So he's a useless monk. Nevertheless, the head monk, they wanted to kill all these monks. And the head monk had to choose. Because he said, the only reason why you want to kill all these monks, all of us, is so we won't tell where the cave is located. We won't tell, we're honest. So just let us go and you can take the cave for yourself. There's plenty of other caves we can go to as monks. We're not sort of attached to it. And the head monks, the head of the thieves said, no, we can't trust you. So what we will do, we'll kill one of you in front of everybody else as a warning to you. So to show we're serious. And the rest of you can go, but remember, if you tell where this cave is to the police, then we will come for you, we'll find you, and we'll do exactly what we did for this chosen sacrifice. So the head monk had to choose who would die so all the rest of the monks could go free. And if you were the head monk, who would you choose? Now, before you say anything, remember those 7 months again. There was a head monk. There was his brother who'd do anything for you. Same as a friend, your mate, would do anything for you. And then there was the enemy, who was always causing trouble and problems. And, you know, that maybe that might be one way you can make some good karma. Old monk was going to die soon anyway. Same as the sick monk. They're on their last legs. So just, you know, just save a bit of suffering, maybe. And last, there was a useless monk who'd never done any good karma for anybody. So, if you were the head monk, who would you choose?
Yourself.
Put your hand up if you think that's the right answer. You are all wrong. But thank you for putting your hand up anyway. It's always a trick question. If I ever ask a question, just keep your hands down. You should learn that by now. And I'm a very sneaky monk, tricky monk, I think. That's the wrong answer. So, any other suggestions?
None of them.
Ah, you read the story before. I know that you're a genius. The answer was none of them. Because his love towards his brother was no more, no less than his love towards himself. He loved his best friend, even the enemy, the old monk, the sick monk, and even the stupid monk. He loved them equally. But most importantly, he loved himself no more, no less than any of the other monks. And when I said this once in the US, there was a bishop listening to my talk, an Episcopalian bishop. There's one reason I told that story. I said, what do you think the answer is? He said himself, wrong answer. And when I explained it to him afterwards, he was really pleased. He said, can I use that in my sermon? He said, oh, please do, yes. No, this is good stuff. This is all sort of copyright. And he said, didn't your teacher, you may not be Christian, as well, I was brought up in a Christian school, brought up, and so there you learned to treat your enemy as yourself. No, was it? To love yourself as... No.
Love your enemy.
As yourself. Didn't say, love your neighbour as yourself, that's right. To love your neighbour as yourself. Didn't mean more than yourself. Love your neighbour as yourself. Which means love yourself as your neighbour. no more, no less. Have you really got that bishop? And he said, yeah, what a wonderful perspective, because these days people treat themselves far less kindly than they treat others. Why? You belong too. So love yourself no more, no less than anybody else. If you never find anyone to love you in this world, you can always love yourself. So I'm going to finish off because I've gone a little bit over time. Please put your hands out. Follow me. Hands out and bring your hands in. Follow me. Come on, get into it. That works. If you've got no one else to hug you, because you've got some sickness or something, you can always hug yourself. You can't catch what you've already got. That's one of my sicknesses, you know, I've got hepatitis. Hepatitis B. Very infectious, be careful. Okay, you know, so, do you want to sum up or finish off or any announcements?
Yeah. Thank you.
Anytime, yeah. All the best, good to see you again. Thank you.